Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted, the podcast for those who are done performing, done people pleasing, and done living life on autopilot. I'm your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and this is where we create disruptive, unapologetic transformations for those who are ready to exit survival mode and reclaim their power. Every episode is your permission slip to burn the rule book, break the cycle, and finally build a life that feels like yours. So let's disrupt everything that's holding you back and start living life on your own terms. This is your trigger warning. This podcast is raw. It is real, and it doesn't sugarcoat what it means to survive trauma, abuse, mental health battles, or even the aftermath of living in survival mode for too damn long. What you hear on Survival Mode Disrupted includes unfiltered stories, graphic details, and a vulnerable truth that may trigger some of the audience. Please prioritize your emotional safety. If something feels too heavy, pause. Breathe. Come back when you're ready or not at all. Your healing is yours to honor. These episodes are based on lived experience, not therapy sessions or clinical advice. Listening does not replace mental health treatment or constitute a coach-client relationship. If you're in crisis, please seek immediate help from a licensed professional or contact your local emergency services. This space is built with care, but it's also built for truth and built for disruption. Take what you need, leave the rest, and most of all, trust yourself. If this podcast speaks to your soul, you don't have to do this work alone. Feel free to join our free Facebook community for high-achieving women ready to break cycles and heal out loud. Join us at Disrupting Survival Mode on Facebook. Or grab the book that started this movement, Exiting Survival Mode, a raw step-by-step guide to help you identify, release, and rebuild from the survival patterns that have been keeping you stuck. Hello, 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 and welcome back to Survival Mode Disrupted. I am your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor. And today we have Terrain with us. And this is actually quite exciting for me because I don't know if I've even said this on this podcast, but about 3 years ago, I was working with a coach. And my coach actually challenged me to tell my story because she recognized that I was held back by my story a bit. So she challenged me to tell my story 50 times in 6 months. And Terrain was one of the first people who I shared my story with. So it's actually really great to be on the other side of the screen. and I get to interview him this time as he tells his story. So I'm really, really excited to have you on Survival Mode Disrupted, Terrain. So why don't you introduce yourself?
Thank you so much. And it's good to be on this side of the screen when it comes to a podcast. So hello, my name is Terrain. I am a relationship coach mentor, as well as I work with women who are trying to find happiness in all the right places after trying to find it in all the wrong places, as well as I do work with men and women who are experiencing grief, and grief could be loss of identity, job, or someone close to them. So that's a little bit about who I am.
I'm excited to have you here. So let's start right off. How would you describe survival mode?
Absolutely. And I think this is a fantastic question. So survival mode to me, I'm going to base it off of the people I work with. So survival mode to me is when you're in a state where you feel like you're stuck, you're not growing, and all you're doing is spinning your wheels. And by spinning the wheels is that you get up at 8:30, you wash your face, you brush your teeth, you shower, 9 o'clock, you're out the door, wash, rinse, repeat. There's no variation to your job. There's no variation to your level of happiness. There's no variation in your emotional output. And the reason why a lot of people get stuck in survival mode, as I describe it that way, is that something has happened to them. Either it could be a childhood experience, it could be a bad breakup, it could be a bad job, it could be something very traumatizing. So when you're in survival mode, some of the feelings that you would feel is that maybe your chest is warm because your heart is hurting. Maybe your mind is racing because you have all these thoughts and you can't control it. Or maybe your back is aching because you're old and you realize that you can't do the things that you normally do. So survival mode can mean a lot of things to a lot of people, but usually it impacts your physical body, your emotional health, as well as your spiritual and mental health. So that is survival mode to me.
I agree with you. And as someone who recognized that I was in survival mode for 20 plus years, that autopilot of that you described, that we rinse and repeat, it really was what I thought life looked like. So now I'm curious, what is your story to and through survival mode?
Well, my story is that if I go all the way back, Letitia, depending on how much time you have, I was raised without my mother or my father. I was raised by my grandmother, who actually passed away in December of 2024. So this is the first woman that has shown me love. This is the first woman that I have loved. And this is the first woman that created an environment of love. So from a very young age, I was in survival mode, as I described, because I was just going through the motions as a child and I didn't know any better. And I definitely knew a lot worse at that point. So if I fast forward to my teenage years, as I was reunited with my parents, I was trying to figure out life without the woman who was my father and my mother for the first 5 years. And if you remember, maybe even to this day, talking in a negative light about your mom and dad is still taboo in a lot of places, right? You can't say that your parents were bad. It doesn't matter what they do to you, you have to accept it because they're your mother and your father. But I wouldn't accept it and I couldn't. So I turned to what a lot of people who are born to immigrant parents do is I turned to religion. So I found God, as they would say, or God found me, depending on how you want to look at it. And then I found a lot of safety in the church. I found a lot of security in the church, and these are things that I wish I had when I was a child outside of my grandmother. And then as an adult, I realized that there's probably a lot of people who have a similar story or a similar experience or who are just struggling, a voice for the voiceless. So I took all of that and I said that I want to be my grandmother to the next generation. I want to be that religious leader to the next generation. I want to be that big brother, that shoulder to lean on. So that was my journey from childhood to adulthood. And that is a story of how I was in survival mode. And a little bit, I'm still in it, but I've thrived, which is the most important aspect of coming out of survival mode.
Yes, a lot of people will recognize, that connection with a grandparent or someone outside of their parental beings. My grandmother died in December 2024 as well, so condolences to you. And she was a huge, huge, she played a huge role in my upbringing. My mom and dad divorced when I was quite young, and then my mom moved to England to go to school. So I was living with my grandmother for several years early on. And even when we moved to England to be with my mom, it was my granny who I was with all day, every day. She was the one that would take me to school, pick me up from school. And then when we moved back to Bermuda, she was the person that was doing the school runs. That's where I was on the weekends. And losing her was, it's still a journey of acceptance, because she played such an integral role in my life. And you spoke about that taboo-ness of we just have to accept our parents. And for me, I remember I disconnected from my father and by choice. It was my choice. And I remember the backlash that I got as a result of that relationship for me created a lot of pain, and I could not understand why I was expected to continue on with the pain simply because he was my father, but there was no expectation of him to reconcile with me. So I sabotage and I Even to this day, it's been 13 years. Even to this day, I still get comments from family like, well, that's your father. I struggle with social expectations as well as social controls. I believe that every individual circumstance should be looked at with a different view because not everything fits under that umbrella. But I also heard, as you told your story, about how you decided to take the love and the support that you received and give it to others, which I think is a very beautiful part of the healing process when we want to reach behind us and give back.
I will agree. And like, if you like, there's this book, and I think a lot of people have read it, where it's like the five love languages, right? So you have words of affirmation, you have gift giving, you have quality time, you have things like that, acts of service, so on. What I found is we all want to be soothed one way or another, right? Either we do it with ourselves, as we discuss, or we look for external factors. Growing up and being And not being able to speak about maybe the bad experiences that children were having, what it does to many people is it puts them in a position to go seek it elsewhere. So let's say, for example, you're a child that you grew up and your parents always told you you're fat and you're stupid. Very common growing up, right? So now you want positive words of affirmation, which is a love language because you didn't get it growing up. So now if you're a woman and the next man who's toxic is going to say that, you know what, you look good today. You look sexy today. What do you think is going to happen? Or if you're a man and they're saying that and your father, who's very disruptive, right? He's telling you that you're not going to grow up to be anything. You're going to be a loser. Now you're going to go out there and you're going to overcompensate. You're going to get the big house. You're going to get the shiny car. You're going to get all these things and you're going to attract people who's going to maybe use you for that. So it puts people in a very difficult situation when they have a difficult childhood as adults. And I wish we would speak about that more just because, yes, parents are trying to do the best that they can do with what they know. But there's some people out there that are very ignorant and very, I'm your mother, I'm your father, you do what you say, to your point, a family member saying that, well, that's your mom, that's your dad. It doesn't matter the type of abuse that they give you, you should always accept them. And if you're going to accept abusive people as a child, then you're going to accept abusive people as an adult.
And that's a very interesting point to make because, right, like I think sometimes people assume in the absence of love, we just get used to it. No, we seek it because it's a core desire for us, right? Like Maslow talks about this, like that safety. We look for safety. We look for shelter. We look for food. We look for comfort from the people who we expect it from. And if we don't get it there, it teaches us a lesson. Right? Like oftentimes that's where our survival identities come from, where you see people who become people pleasers or people who are overachievers because there is an absence that starts in childhood that they are seeking, right? Like for me, I sought validation for a very long time. I sought attention and love in all the wrong places simply because I didn't have that at home. And it wasn't that it wasn't present. It wasn't exactly what I needed. And I think that brings us to a conversation around parenting isn't about the parents, making the parents comfortable. It's not. It's about the children and being able to give them what they needed, which is why I think it's so important for us as humans to really anchor into our healing because there are people who depend on us that don't know any different, right? And then we're writing narratives for them that often become lifelong scripts because of what was absent in childhood.
Once you decide to have children, you have entered into an emotional contract to be there for the child in a way that is better than you're being there for yourself, right? So it is very selfish of someone to think that, well, I can't take care of myself. Let me create a life that is innocent in a sense, in a lot of ways, right? And then you're going to put them in a situation that is not ideal and that's not the best. And you make a fantastic point when you say that, you know what, it's no longer about you as the parent, as a person. It's about that child. And there's a lot of people, because their baseline is that my parents did it this way, I'm going to do it this way, unconsciously, right? Because if you ask a lot of these people who have had bad childhood experiences, they can tell you, Leticia, every single thing they didn't like about their childhood. And then when they have children, you go ask their children what's going on, and they'll tell you everything they don't like about their childhood. And then it's so similar to what the parent went through because there's a disconnect, right? It's our baseline. My parents are alcoholic. Why am I an alcoholic? Why my partner's alcoholic, right? I discipline my children with physical discipline, and then you realize that they had it as well. So there's definitely need more education and more self-reflection when it comes to the relationship that people create.
Absolutely. And that speaks to the level of the conditioning, right? So when I talk about accident survival mode, excuse me, I often talk about it in three phases. I talk about self-awareness. We can't change what we can't see. I talk about reprogramming and I talk about a reinvention because there has to be a shift in who we are, who how we present to the world so that we can move beyond this state. But I think oftentimes we as humans lack the awareness, right? Like, which is why we end up in, like, for instance, I was in an abusive relationship. There wasn't an awareness of what made it abusive other than the physical for me. I didn't understand the emotional and the financial abuse that I endured. So I ended up in another situation. I wasn't being physically abused, but I was being emotionally abused. I was being financially abused. And then the next relationship, okay, I acknowledge the emotional abuse, but now I'm still being physically abused. So without awareness, we cannot change the conditioning that is often present in our childhood and our upbringing. And oftentimes it's not overt conditioning. It's very mild and mellow and seemingly unseen, but then it shows up in our behaviors much later on. And what I love to mention is our subconscious brain likes to keep us in what is familiar. And as much as we may despise the familiar until we actively change it, that is what we will show up in and show up as and actively seek, right? So, like, if someone is in survival mode for an extended period of time, they seek chaos because that is all they know. And it's not something like the walking on the road, that looks like the most chaotic situation. I'm heading over there. No, that's not what happens, but we tend to be attracted to the same traits, the same behaviors, without recognizing that.
When you're in survival mode, you will attract toxic behaviors that are unresolved in your life. So, for example, someone who is in survival mode may isolate, work, right? They'll drown themselves in work because they're thinking, okay, if I don't work, I don't have enough money, right? Let's go through the steps. So, let's say finances, right? I don't have enough money to pay for my bills, so I'm in survival mode. You ever notice that the people around them are just as broke? Like broke, like that one broke person is never surrounded by successful, rich people, right? Or if you look at another, let's say the emotional aspect, right? Like someone who is emotionally unavailable, right? They've had bad relationship, bad friendship after one, after the other, right? If you look at their peer group, it's a similar situation. This is why when a man and woman gets divorced within the same year, so many of their friends get divorced. Well, you did it, girl. Let me go do it too. Well, you divorce her. We're all getting a divorce, right? And they have a divorce party because there isn't a successful, healthy, married person at a divorce party, right? They're usually away. Then, if you look at the mental health aspect of the survival mode, Someone who's struggling with their thoughts, who maybe they don't understand their place in the world. It would be in their best interest to surround people who have made it. But one of the worst things that can happen to someone in survival mode is to be around people who have made it, in quotations, because now not only are they in survival mode, they feel unworthy. Because it's a reminder, you have this house, why can't I'm renting? You have the car, I'm taking the bus. You have a healthy relationship, I've been single for the last 10 years. You have good friends, my friends stab me in the back. It's a reminder of what they don't have. So it pushes them further into survival mode. And so what do? They find like-minded people. And the unfortunate part about finding like-minded people, depending on how they are, they will keep you in survival mode because they don't want you to leave. Because if you were to leave survival mode, then it's like, oh my God, Letitia got better? What's wrong with me? But sooner or later, with some people, instead of what's wrong with me, it turns out, oh, Letitia thinks she's too good. She moved out, she got a nice house, she moved country, she reconciled with her family members. She thinks she's better than us, and now you have the competition. And some people who I've spoke to, they've made a difficult decision. When they start to see improvement in their life, because there are the people have the crab in the barrel mentality, they pull them back and they're like, you know what? I don't want to be better. I'd rather be with these people because maybe the person I'm becoming isn't something I'm worthy of. So they continue to be around people who are toxic and who keep them in the survival mode.
That worthiness piece is a very important piece to recognize, right? I think in many of my discussions here, we've talked about that worthiness piece because oftentimes people just discount it. But if you are do not believe wholeheartedly that you deserve something better, every part of you subconsciously and consciously will keep you exactly where you are. And you know you also mentioned an interesting point, that crab in the bucket mentality. People want to see you go do good, but nobody particularly those who are in survival mode, nobody wants to see you do better than them, because it then be It does, you know, you can't help as humans to create this mirror of expectation based on the people that are around you. And if someone has been able to heal and liberate themselves from the bottom of the bucket, it's not about, well, what did they do? It becomes, well, what's wrong with me? And it's not that. They challenged their narrative. They challenged their habits and their patterns so that they can do something different. But oftentimes, people don't use it as motivation. They use it as a way to talk themselves out of their own dreams, which I've seen so many times. You know, it goes back to that saying, you should never be the smartest person in the room if you want to grow. But people won't put themselves in places where they look dumb or stupid, right? So they just stay instead of challenging and instead of growing. They miss out on the opportunities that can actually edify them and get them to where they want to be. Because anybody who is remotely closer to your goal than you are can pattern the way that you can do it if you are open and willing to receive in that information, even if it is sitting on the sidelines and just looking, okay, well, this person, instead of watching Netflix and chilling, they're doing what they want to do. Instead of blaming the system, they are fighting against the system to make things happen for themselves. There's always someone who can mirror success for us. If we're willing to be open to receiving it.
Yeah, it's the perspective of are you running a race or are you running a marathon? Because when you're running the race, all you're worried about is finishing first. When you're running the marathon, all you're concerned about is finishing. So some people, they're like, well, if I can't be the best, I'm not going to try. Whereas some other people are like, you know what? I'm running my own pace. If Letitia finishes ahead of me, she able to meet the goals 6 months from now, and I do 9 months, it doesn't matter because I'm not trying to beat her. I'm trying to win my own journey. I have an example, and there's a few former friends that I have, and 2018, before the lockdown, before COVID, before the world became totally different, they were very gung-ho about self-improvement. I'm going to go to the gym. I'm going to read more books. I'm going to educate myself. Very proactive when it came to that. And they're doing well. But unfortunately, what happened is that instead of with the marathon perspective, as long as I finish, they're in the race perspective. So what they did was there's people who are further ahead than them. So they developed a dislike for certain people. They started to blame women. I can't get in a relationship because women are going for men who make more money. Instead of saying that, okay, I have a woman that likes me for the money I make, they're competing. Even though the people that they were competing with didn't know they existed, but they built up this villain in their story. And then it got worse. And they started to blame people of certain backgrounds, cultures, religious backgrounds, to the point last year, they blame their city, their country, and the people within it for their problems. And the reason I share this is if you're in the race perspective and you always have to be number one, anyone that is in the race with you is a villain because they're there in your mind to take your spot. But if you're running a marathon, it doesn't matter who finishes first or second because you're running at your own pace. All you want to make sure is that you finish and you finish well and you're happy. So I think that goes to your point where when it comes to living in that way, I always look at life with those two perspectives because self-sabotage is a real thing. And there's a lot of people out there that either they're sabotaging themselves directly or they're keeping people around them so they can have those people subconsciously sabotage themselves for them.
But I also think that self-sabotage is something that is also conditioned within us, right? Because one of the things that we see, and this even goes back to the conversation about the taboo-ness of parenthood and, the removing ourselves from our biological parents, is we are conditioned as humans to make everyone else around us comfortable. And often that means putting our needs, desires to the back burner. So if we have been conditioned, okay, well, I got to make this person happy, I got to make this person happy all before I make myself happy, it forces us to self-sabotage in a way and self-abandon because we have this expectation that everyone else is more important than us. Now, if you add in that dynamic of the villainhood where everyone else is now fighting against us, it really does stall our growth because we're fighting this duality of, well, this is my villain, I've got to be better than them, but oh my gosh, I got to be polite too. I got to make sure that everybody around me is comfortable. I can't show up in my full authenticity because it's not going to be accepted because someone is not going to like us. And it's a difficult battle as we're healing and growing and moving beyond that narrative. But I mean, let's keep it real. That's why a lot of people stay stuck for a very long time because we aren't taught how to put us first. We aren't taught how to prioritize us, which then ingrains that competitiveness that also stalls our healing as well.
People pleasing is very dangerous for a lot of people. And the reason why I say that is exactly in the examples you gave, as well as you will give up advances in your life for people that wouldn't do the same for you. And that ties into what we said when it comes to survival mode. If you were to take a step out of survival mode, you would know that your friends will want the very best for you. Either they're going to say it, which they should be saying it, or their behaviors are going to demonstrate it. There's someone that I used to work with, and she said that her friends are the best friends in the world, Letitia. And I was like, okay, tell me why are they so good? It's like, well, you know what? I do this for them. I was like, hold on. You're telling me what you do for them. So is what you do for them making them good, or is it what they do for you that makes them good? Like, and she asked, what do you mean? I was like, well, tell me the behaviors that make these people good. And Letitia, she couldn't come up with anything. So then I asked the question, I was like, if they're not demonstrating why they're good people, if they're not showing you why they're good people, how can they be good people? And especially, how can they be good people to you? So what she was doing was, the people who she deemed good, they were good only because they allowed her to do things for them, and she was so trapped in people pleasing. And I say that that is another aspect of survival mode, because once you step out of that, you begin to realize that, hey, you know what? There's people out here that just me showing up brings a smile to their face. I don't have to give them money. I don't have to give them resources. I don't have to break my back for them. They just want me to be around. And I think that's where we have to get to the point so we can step out of people pleasing, which is a prison for a lot of people, and it keeps them trapped in the survival mode that we're talking about.
I talk about people pleasing all the time, Tareem, because I didn't actually recognize that it was a survival identity, right? Like somewhere along the way, we learned that if we do for others, it makes them feel better. And that's what we should be focused on, right? Like I recognize I was a huge people pleaser, and it's especially when it came to men. And one of the things that I had to do in my healing process was get to the root of why that happened. Like, how did I end up here? My father was a person who he was the youngest child by nearly decades. Like my aunties were like 18 to 24 years older than my father. So my granny treated him like he was, I don't even know what to say, the prodigal son, but he was also treated like that by his siblings who had children that were close to his age, who then also treated him like that. So he lived his life on this pedestal, right? And everything just about that he wanted or needed, he got from his family, because of those dynamics. What happened then was anyone who didn't do what he wanted was villainized, was there was consequences, and I was one of them. I was this rebel child who wanted to find my own way, and I learned very early on if I didn't do what my daddy wanted, I would be punished severely, usually financially, right? So I learned probably from about 7 or 8 that it in my best interest to make my daddy happy, which then became it's in my best interest to make the man in my life happy. And that went on for decades until I could go back to the origin of that. A lot of people will say, oh, I'm just nice. I am just so nice. And they don't recognize that there is a big difference between being nice, which allows us to be used, and being kind, right? Where it's, I choose to do this with good intentions, not because it's going to create a better circumstance for me. So learning that, well, how do I shift this? How do I stop being a people pleaser and saying no? I mean, saying yes when my soul is screaming no, being able to set boundaries was the answer. And that was the hardest thing for me because I had learned that if I did set boundaries, I will be punished for it. So, there are so many elements in the healing process beyond survival mode that on the outside makes looks like we've had a complete personality transplant, right? Because now we're setting boundaries, now we're not overworking for validation, now we're not doing all of these things other than focusing on what makes us happy and content, which is what life is really about. But if you look at it, we're not taught that at any point in time until we get to a point where we've been stuck for a really long time and now finally we seek healing.
Well, you made a good point. If you break down someone's childhood as children, very young until let's say 10 years old, What is it that the average child wants to do? Make your parents proud. Mom, I got an A plus. Dad, I won a trophy in sports, right? Like when you look at it from that perspective, we spend a lot of our childhood trying to get the attention, affection, and the admiration from our parents. Now, if it's lacking, then we're going to ramp it up. We're going to say, okay, you know what? I want to put it in your face. But there's going to come a point where, like you mentioned, we're going to have to understand, okay, am I doing it for everybody else or am I doing it for me? And one thing I spoke to a parenting coach, and she shared this, is that when you have two or more children and you have one child that's high performing and the other child is, let's say, disruptive, what you'll have is that the parents will naturally, in a lot of cases, pay more attention to the child that is disruptive. So now that child who's high performing, they have to ramp up their performance. Instead of A's, they're getting A pluses. Instead of A pluses, they're getting A plus. To the point where once they get an adult, they go into the world, they're going to try to do the same thing. They're going to overcompensate. They're going to be over the top because now they've seen that the attention that they want was given to someone who's disruptive or chaotic. So the problem with that now is you may have some people who are going to stop performing well. Now they're going to become disruptive, to your point, right? They're going to seek attention, validation from all these areas that maybe aren't the most healthiest. It's because as a child, they realize, well, success didn't get me what I wanted from the people who should be loving me. Let me try to find it another way. And this is what spills out into the people pleasing. You ever notice that people pleasers, they don't ever people please the people that are very healthy? It's always the most toxic of people, the most dangerous of people, right? So it's funny that they will do it the other way and not do it that way. So that's where childhood plays such an important part, like you mentioned, Letitia.
And that is the same as, when there is, for instance, I would say when I look back at my relationships, a lot of my relationships mirrored what my relationship with my father looked like. So even in that, I was seeking all the negative. I never went out and sought the positive. Like, and it's weird how we do that, right? Like, it's either we're being pe people pleasing the most negative people in our lives, or we are looking for the most negative elements of a person who we've wanted love from. And it's all done so subconsciously. It's just really weird how that happens. Like I always say, gosh, had I looked for a hard working man who, did this and this rather than the narcissistic traits and the person who abandoned me when I didn't do what I wanted, things would have looked very different. But again, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, how we actively seek what we know, what becomes our homeostasis, what becomes our comfort zone. And it's so important when we talk about accident survival mode, being able to rewrite those narratives, being able to challenge them, because that is what liberates us.
Well, and also, I'm going to piggyback off of that. When you're people pleasing, the reason why, one of the reasons why we go for those who are maybe not the healthiest, who are maybe more toxic, is that someone who's successful, who's healthy, who has resolved their issues, there's always that fear that they're going to leave us, right? Are we worthy of that type of relationship? What we talked about earlier, right? Like when we find someone that is quote unquote beneath us, or maybe that is more disruptive, or maybe that's more. I don't like using the word damaged, but let's say use that for lack of a better word. That's more damaged than us. It gives us the opportunity to say that, you know what? As long as I take care of this person, they won't leave me. Whereas someone who's healthy, like, I don't need you to take care of me. Just let's take care of each other. But you have such a need to want to take care of them. They may say that, you know what? I may need to step away. Then they'll leave us, and now we're left in our own thoughts again, right?
And then it just becomes this endless cycle until we challenge it. Terrain, I have definitely enjoyed this conversation. So tell us a little bit more about how we can connect with you online.
Absolutely. So you can find me at www.behindtheshades.ca. That is my website. All the coaching tools are there and everything. If you mention this show, you get a free 1 hour session with me, as well as you can find me at Facebook at Behind the Shades as well. So search Behind the Shades or Behind the Shades interviews, and I will always come up.
Oh, I love that. I'll make sure that information is in the show notes. And before we wrap it all up, one key takeaway for the audience to action.
Yes. I'm going to give everyone this tip. This is what I did. Find yourself a full body mirror, fully clothed, of course. Look in that mirror and tell yourself something that you love about yourself, right? It sounds easy, but it's very difficult to do because it is always easier to let the negative thoughts be intrusive. But look yourself in the mirror and say that, you know what, I love this about you today, and identify a behavior. That's going to start a very real conversation that you're going to have with yourself, which is very needed, because when I did that, it gave me the opportunity to identify what I loved about myself, what I liked about myself, and what I didn't like about myself. And that's going to start your healing journey. So find that mirror, have that conversation with yourself, and let's get everyone to a point where they can find happiness in all the right places.
I love that. You owe it to yourself to have that conversation. Taryn, thank you so much for your time on Survival Mode Disrupted. And audience, I just want to remind you that you were not built to break, but you damn sure were not built to just survive. Disrupt the cycle, reclaim your life, and thrive on your own terms. And I will see you next week. Once again, thank you for joining another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted, hosted by the Survival Mode Disruptor, Leticia. You didn't land here by accident. This conversation, it probably cracked something open on purpose. Because survival mode isn't just a phase, it's a pattern, an identity, a prison masked as strength. But here's the truth. You're not broken. You're just unfinished. So if something stirred in you today, don't ignore it. Don't numb it. Move with it. And I want to once again invite you to join Disrupting Survival Mode, the Facebook community where healing is loud and messy and real. I also want to invite you to buy my book, The Survival Mode Exit Plan, because your breakthrough deserves a blueprint. And if you felt seen today, be sure to share this episode with someone who needs to hear it. Like, subscribe, and drop a review. That's how we amplify the voices that need to be heard. And remember, this isn't about fixing yourself. This is about finding yourself again beneath the rubble. Until next time, choose ease, choose power, choose you. This is Survival Mode Disrupted. Let's keep shaking shit up.